It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
And welcome to another edition of Wayne's Comics. This week I have Gianluca Glazer with me, and he's going to discuss the business aspects of comics, as well as what he enjoys about the industry today, and give some of the comics he likes best and not all that interested in. Also, I'll discuss the usual topics, what's new in your comic store, as well as give some reviews of the latest comics. So let's get to it. I'm talking today with Gianluca Glazer, who's a comic book professional. Now, you work with Radical. You laugh.
I've worked with Boom Studios. I've worked with Radical. I've recently been helping out Ben Arroyo with one of their titles. And I've been helping it's being released through Image. And I've also been helping another person that has a book coming out through Image, Sam Sakar, who you may remember from Caliber.
Right, very good. Yeah, today we're just going to basically just talk about, like, what kind of things you like the best and what do you think, like, comics are doing well and what do you think they could improve. So, like, which comics are your favorite comics that you're buying that are out now?
I like independents a lot of the time. I like also kind of stuff. I'm not as big into superheroes with the exception of Batman and Batwoman, but I like crime noir type of stories. I like a lot of fantasy stuff too. Let's see, what other kind of things do I like collecting? Oh, science fiction. I'm a big science fiction fan.
Did you happen to get Bullet to the Head? There was a trade paperback or a graphic novel, Bullet to the Head, I think was coming out from Dynamite, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a crime noir one. And I tried to get to the store fast enough, but I didn't get there. And they were ordering it for me. And I just wondered if you had seen it.
I hadn't heard about that. I'll check it out. I do like a lot of Dynamite stuff, but I haven't purchased anything from Dynamite recently, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. I was checking out a lot of their stuff last year. And then, I don't know, just stuff right now hadn't really interested me. I know they've been doing a lot of the Black Terror and the Green Hornet. So I've kind of shied away a bit from them. But I do overall like their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do some creative stuff. There's Bring On the Thunder is something that they're doing right now, which it focuses on a black hero, which is something a little different. You know, we don't get many comics with that diverse of a cast. So you'd say Dynamite's one of the things that not quite doing the things that you'd like to see them do currently.
Well, I like them in general. They did a Dracula book that was really good. They did some Sherlock Holmes stuff with Leah Moore. But, yeah, just recently in looking over, I have no interest in the Black Terror. I'm sorry, you know. I'm sure it's very good. I'm sure a lot of talented people have worked on it. You know, it's just very tough to get somebody, especially if it's, like, superhero stuff and you don't know about it and you're trying to get into it. It's kind of difficult to get into.
Well, Black Terror is part of a group. He's part of this Alex Ross created group. The trouble I have with these books is he'll often do the cover and he'll do like sketches in the back of the book, but he doesn't do the art in the inside. And that sort of leaves me cold.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's a creator on it. You know, he does really amazing artwork. But, you know, he only has so much time, I'm guess. He does a lot of covers for a lot of different books, too. He's done one for Rocketeer. I think he does the second issue also. And that kind of art style he does, I'm sure it takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. He uses photo references, that pictures he takes himself of people in costume, and he bases his drawings off of that. I do like the Warlord of Mars books, though, that Dynamite has out.
Yeah. Those are good ones. Ian Cullen, who does the SFP Now one, and he and I both like the Warlord of Mars ones. They're very, very good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just – Alex Ross has another thing that they're putting out called Kirby Genesis.
Yeah, I saw. It's got several covers, like between 6 or 9 different covers.
Mm-hmm. And that always worries me. And Marvel did that for a while where they did X-Men books. They had X-Men number 1 came out, and every week they kept releasing it with a new cover. And then after 4 weeks, then they had this fold-out version of it. And I was like, you know, how many times can I get the same book? Why don't I just wait for the last one and do that? But the thing that gets me is when they do that much and when it's Alex Ross, but he's not actually doing the art.
Yeah, I think Kingdom Come, the main character in that, the old man, I think I saw a picture of his dad and it's the exact same person.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And he's really talented. I mean, he takes those pictures himself and he bases his artwork on that. And different people have different ways of, you know, doing artwork. A lot of people sometimes end up putting in movie actors' faces in some of their books, I've noticed, you know.
Well, you know, that's actually something Alex Ross does. I think Fred McMurray is the basic thing for Captain Marvel, DC. And I always look at him and go, his face looks so familiar to me. Who does he look like?
And it's, you know, you did I wanted to mention, you did an interview with Andrew Cosby, or at least you're going to in the near future.
Right.
And one of his books, Exile, was kind of like, to me, at the time I was working at Boom, it was like an all-star cast. Because you had Samuel Jackson in there. One character was The Rock. You had Philip Seymour Hoffman with a beard in that. Josh Lucas was one of the characters also.
Goodness. I guess as long as it's not too close and they don't come after you to say they need royalties or something, I guess you're all
right. Right, exactly. Some guys, though, like what's his name in The Boys, is very he's very honored to have his image in that. Simon Pegg.
Right. Yeah, he's the Highland laddie, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, Wee Hoogie.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I used to buy that for my boss who liked it, but I got to the place where he said he was getting a little uninterested in it. It's a little too sexually oriented for my taste. I don't know how you feel about that. Do you buy The Boys?
I have like the first big, huge hardcover collection they have of it. I enjoyed it very much. You know, I do like that kind of humor. It is an interesting new take. It's a group of people that keep superheroes in line, and these superheroes are just people like you and I, but they have these powers, and so they abuse the powers, you know. There's a lot of rampant drug use, sex, orgies even. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that kind of humor, but I haven't really followed it since the story that they had in Russia. I've only read up to that far. I did enjoy it, but I can see how it can get old after a while.
Well, I think that's the problem they're having now, is that they're starting to have to reinvigorate it. And I think the problem they're going to face is that how many times can you reinvigorate something, you know, without losing the original flavor? Yeah.
Well, they're doing origin stories now, I know. They did one with Highland Laddie, and now they're doing one with one of the main boys' characters. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to, since I have experience in marketing stuff, I can really go into detail regarding multiple covers and why publishers do them and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, because
it's educational.
You know, because I never understand why they do it. And that I understand they want to make money. This is show business.
Money.
Sorry, it all comes down to show business, and the business aspect of it is they're there to make money.
Yeah.
If you want to just go ahead and explain a little bit about that, I'd like to know more about that, actually.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit it right there on the head. Variant covers are designed to make money, and this is a fact. People complain about variant covers, but the real numbers, facts show that if a publisher releases a book and it has two or three different covers, it will sell better than a comic book that only has one cover.
Really?
It is, because I guess retailers want to have each copy of the cover, and they give themselves enough of that cover, and it ends up being more than if they were just to order a regular book. Mm-hmm. In terms of like experience in seeing this, I know that Hotwire, the original miniseries, the issue 4 book had 4 different covers, and the issue 3 book had, I believe, only 2 covers. And issue 4 had more initial sales than issue 3.
And
part of that could have been the book becoming more popular and gaining an audience, but it was a big number. It was like 1,000 copies more.
Well, I noticed one of the things they do, like currently DC will put out pencil versions of it. And, you know, Marvel will do something like – Marvel will put like a blank cover on it. I mean, they had ones that they actually just put a blank white cover, and they said to go to like comic conventions and have your favorite artist draw your picture on there.
Oh, cool.
I can't remember which one that was, but, you know, because I don't buy all the Marvels. But I'm just curious, is that what they build into this? When they start printing the books and stuff, do they know that they're already going to print multiple covers?
Yeah, they have an idea pretty much. And they have to have, like, some type of image to show and previews for those different covers. Mm-hmm. Now, there's different ways that a publisher can use multiple covers to their advantage. One way of doing it is you just release the comic and you have different variants and retailers can order those individually. And then what you have also is called incentive covers. And they're special covers that could be 1 in 10, 1 in 25, or if it's something really huge, 1 in 50. And what that means is that the retailer has to order 10 copies or 25 copies or 50 copies, depending on that ratio, of the regular covers or cover. And then this thing is unlocked for them to order this special incentive cover. And this special incentive cover is usually – it's either unmarked or it's priced special edition so that the retailer can sell it for $20 as opposed to $3 or $4.
Now, we're aiming at collectors when we do this kind of stuff, obviously, because when I go to the local bookstore, I see a cover. The variant cover is almost always like 2 to 3 times what the cost of the regular cover is.
Yeah.
So what they're after is they're saying, we know there are collectors out there, and certain books we know a certain number of people just automatically collect, and this is how we're going to make money, is to do that. And what you're saying, it's a very successful way of selling comics.
Well, it's been around since the 90s. Again, people complain about it, but the numbers say otherwise. And if it wasn't profitable, Dynamite wouldn't be doing it, you know, because, you know, it gets more people ordering more versions of the comic. Now, another thing besides the incentive cover is the store-exclusive cover that some publishers will do. And that is where they will do a special limited edition, maybe only 1,000 copies, and it'll be exclusive to a large retail chain like Midtown Comics or Graham Cracker Comics or even Lone Star. Mm-hmm. And what that is that they do a deal with the with that particular store, and that store agrees to ahead of time buy those limited edition copies, and they probably get a special discounted price. It's done outside of Diamond. And so they have the sole rights to sell both in their store chains and online for a higher price, of course, this special limited edition cover.
Cool.
So it's a way to get retailers involved in promoting a title. I know when Boom Studios originally did the Muppets comic, the first issue had a special Midtown Comics edition, and they used the tagline, "The Muppets Take Manhattan," or "Muppets Take Midtown," something similar to that.
That's cool. Well, it's interesting because, you know, this also, I guess, applies to convention covers, because every once in a while, you know, you go to San Diego, they'll have the San Diego Comic-Con edition. And then a month or two later, I guess, which ones they don't sell at San Diego will be available to the general public through the order forms.
Yeah.
So this is basically the same concept. I mean, how many are there other things besides that? You got the convention thing, you got the store thing, you've got the, you know, certain number. Are there any other ways that they do that with special covers? Anything like
you have shows, you have retailers, you have incentives. Like I said, the incentives one are that are just specially available only if you order a certain amount of books. There may be like exclusives available only through the publisher's website. You know, that's another way of promoting these type of books. You know, there's always going to be somebody coming up with a new way, you know, of doing that. Sometimes overships may have a different cover. When an overship is, this is another educational thing, but when books are ordered through Diamond, there are a certain amount of retailers that are signed up for Diamond's overship program. And what the overship program is that if a publisher chooses to, and they usually do it with like a first issue, is that publishers tend to underorder books because they can't return copies of comic books. Bookstores can return books, but comic stores are stuck with what they order. So a store will generally underorder a book because they would rather underorder the book and then pay a little bit more in reordering more copies of the book than to accidentally overorder the book and be stuck with merchandise that they can't move. Mm-hmm. Now, what a publisher can do is that if a retailer is signed on to the overship program, the publisher will want to do an overship. Diamond will calculate from all the different retailers involved in that they have to have been both in the overship program and have ordered the book. And so they get a certain amount of extra copies based on what they ordered. So Diamond gives you that total. And then somebody who is very smart or ingenious wanting to market this thing does a different, particularly different cover for the overship. Now, what happens is this. When the retailers get their books, they get these overship copies of the books. Now, they didn't order these books. They're overships. They came to the retailer. But the retailer will get charged for these books if they don't do the following thing. I believe they have 30 days to do it. They didn't want these extra books. They simply tear off the cover and send it back to Diamond. And for every cover that they tear off of these overship books and return to Diamond, they don't get charged. But if there was, like, let's say they got 6 overship books, they only returned 5 covers, then they get charged for that one cover that they didn't return.
This reminds me when I was a kid that they used to tear off the tops of covers and send them back in. I think that was how they got credit, was they wouldn't send the whole book back. They would tear right. off the top and send it back and say, well, I couldn't sell this. Well, then they would still go ahead and sell the book.
Yes, there were some people who did that. So what a publisher could do if they want to get retailers to keep those overship books is that they just put a different cover on it. Mm-hmm. And so the retailer may like that particular cover. It may be by a big name artist. Mm-hmm. Usually that's what people do with the incentives, is that they attach a big name like Alex Ross, or they do a sketch variant or something like that off of a big name. Mm-hmm. So the retailer may say, wow, this is really good. I'm not going to tear this off. I'm going to just sell it as normal.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because I think a lot of us don't understand that we see the multiple covers, and like, I'm just sort of frustrated. I go, I'm going to have all these different covers. How am I supposed to know which one I want? I just usually get, because I don't care really, I just tend to buy this stuff. But I know it's a big business on covers, and I'm glad to know a little bit more about that. It's pretty cool. Why don't we just go ahead and wrap this up? And we talked about things that we thought didn't go well. Which books do you look forward to every month, or which ones are your favorites of what's coming out now?
Absolutely. I love Criminal. Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. It's a really good book. I don't even wait for the trades. I get every single issue that comes out. Same thing with their superhero variant, Incognito. Mm-hmm. And the reason is this, is that they offer something you just can't get in the trade. Mm-hmm. If you get the trade, you just get the comic book. But if you buy the single issues, you get a great little historical article. If it's Criminal, it's on Noir Films. Mm-hmm. Which is something that interests me. And if it's on Incognito, it's on classic pulp characters or classic pulp books, some that are even long forgotten. And you get kind of a history lesson, how it started, what the success of, you know, what the success of it, you know, was going on at the times, you know. You get a nice little dissertation there. It's fun. You know, you get like a nice little cover image too, done by Sean Phillips for each of these stories. So that to me definitely works, because you're getting people buying comic books as opposed to waiting for the trades by giving them something extra.
Well, that's the thing. There's a group of people who only buy trades, and I'm just the opposite. I really like the story. I'll buy the trade to keep it. But other than that, I'm like you. I buy the individual issues because I like Criminal and I enjoy Incognito. Great fun things to read. So we're on the same page with that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Numbers, again, this is a little marketing thing, but, you know, a lot of first issue books do very well. And then from issue one to issue two, you definitely get between a 25 to sometimes 40% drop in sales numbers. And the reason for that is that a lot of people, unlike us, will check out the first issue and they'll be like, it's good, but it's not great. They'll either drop it or they'll put it in a category of it's good, but I'm going to wait for the trade and read the rest. I'm not going to follow it all the way through.
Just like television shows, a lot of people watch the first time a show's on, it almost never gets that high ratings again.
Right. Unless it's like a show that was little seen at first and then gains popularity later on.
Like X-Files is kind of a set.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, John. We'll have to have you back on again and talk some more about comics. It's good to know the business aspect of it so that we can understand why do people do what they do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I offer this kind of knowledge, and I'm happy to pass it on to people.
I appreciate it very much. Okay. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
And let's get to this week's comic offerings, and there are plenty of them, so let's get to them right away. There's the Nexus Archives Hardcover Volume 12. By this time, Steve Rude's no longer drawing it, but Mike Baron is still telling some really interesting stories with one of my very favorite comic characters of all time. Batman 709, which is continuing on with the Azrael storyline, which I'm grateful that'll be ending soon. DC Universe Online Legends number 6 continues the storyline. This time Tony Bedard is the one doing the writing. It's pretty interesting. They've got some good stuff. This is based, of course, on the online multiplayer game, so it's very good. Legion of Superheroes number 12 continues on with the Legion of Supervillains, and they're menacing the Legion. Justice League of America number 56, the story of Eclipso continues on. Power Girl number 23, we get to see Superman and Power Girl fight magic, and we get an appearance from Zatanna, who's apparently getting pretty popular. Supergirl number 63 continues the storyline that they've been following with people using social media to be able to track superheroes. Superman Batman 83 is them back in time or in an alternate universe where they're facing very old medieval versions of themselves. Teen Titans number 94 is really interesting. Mr. Krall continues to tell good stories with the characters. Related to that is Young Justice number 3, which is based on the show. This is a beginning of another storyline, and I kind of like it real well. The book of the week, though, has to be Zatanna number 12, which is just such a great comic. I can see why Zatanna's getting popular. This week, the story has to do with somebody who can reverse time, which, of course, undoes all of Zatanna's spells because she speaks backwards. The solution's really good, and a fairy actually gives her the way to solve this. And it's a good story. It's a nice one-issue story. It's kind of funny because Paul Dini's been telling really good stories in the book before, with Zatanna, for instance, being turned into a puppet or a mannequin. So we've got to see that. It's been a good book, well written, and I like the art real well too. Another thing I want to make sure I mention is the War of the Green Lanterns with Green Lantern number 65 and the Green Lantern Corps number 59. We were seeing Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner being stranded on an ice planet, and what they have to do is find a way off and be able to take on the Green Lantern Corps. The Corps is sort of undone because they have Parallax's yellow come back and been a part of the Green Lantern rings, and that allows Parallax to take control of them. Not good. So we get to see a really interesting twist or two. Mr. Johns likes to tell a fun story that we never know where we're going, but it's fun when we get there. Jericho Season 3, number 506 is out, which I like. That's always good, based, of course, on the popular CBS show. Doctor Who Fairy Tale Life, number 1, is timed well because this past weekend was when the first episode of the 6th series of Doctor Who appeared. Twilight Guardian number 404 concludes an interesting little miniseries where a girl who's been patrolling her neighborhood thinks that she's a superhero and reads comics for inspiration. It looks like she meets her father at the beginning of the issue, but she's not quite sure. And then we get to the other comics. We get to see Abattoir number 4 of 6 from Radical, which is a real creepy book. Bullet to the Head trade paperback is a crime noir story that's kind of fun and interesting, so if you like that kind of thing, I would recommend it. Darkwing Duck number 11 is the usual fun from Darkwing Duck, and I just kind of find those fun. I'm not looking forward to the day when that shifts over to Marvel and probably becomes a lot less interesting. Days Missing Kestis number 5 of 5 is about a character who joins in the main character's fight about keeping history straight, but she has a very different point of view than he does, so it's an interesting story. There are 2 Green Hornet titles. There's Green Hornet number 15 and Green Hornet Strikes number 7. Malignant Man number 1 of 4 has to do with a man who ends up with cancer. Well, at least that's what he thinks it is. And when we come to find out it's something much worse than that, it also gives him a lot more abilities. So it's a lot of strange and wonderful things going on in Malignant Man number 1 of 4. Sixth Gun number 11 has to be the biggest book that Oni Press has ever come out with, because that has been going on regular-like for a long time. Issue number 11's out. It's, as always, a really good story. Stan Lee Soldier Zero number 7 continues the wonderful Boom comic, and head honcho Stan Lee's interesting take on what happens when a paraplegic gets in a uniform that gives him the ability to move like a regular person. Very good stuff. From Marvel, there's Iron Man 2.0 number 4. Rhodey's got new armor, and we see what he begins to do with it. And Sigil number 2 of 4 is out. That is from the old comics that Marvel recently bought the rights to. And it's an interesting story. So anyway, those are the books that came out this week.
Did you come to Earth for the music and stay for the science fiction? Join a guided tour of the minds that make science fiction great. Get on our Cosmic Double-Decker Tour Bus at www.balticonpodcast.org and see all the sights. Coming up on our right, Time Shifted for your viewing pleasure, are fascinating interviews with writers, fans, and scientists. Streaming in on our left are author readings, con-going tips, and essays. And at the end of the tour, there's always more of that great music that brought you here in the first place. So climb aboard, strap in, and hold on to your petty pallets. It's the Balticon Podcast Tour to the ends of space and time.
To get to Earth for the music.
www.balticonpodcast.org.
Let's have a look at what strange and wonderful things are coming into your comic store. This week is the week that those people who enjoy the Thor character are waiting for. The movie hero action figures are coming in. And there's a bunch of them. And looks pretty good. Look pretty close to the character in the movie. So I think people are going to pretty much like those. There's a bunch of DVDs showing up this week for some strange reason. Batman Beyond Return of the Joker is coming back again. Batman the Brave and the Bold DVD Season 1 Part 2. I wish they would just put a whole season and not bother with these parts because it makes me crazy. I keep buying the pieces parts and then they come up with the whole business. I'm stuck. There are a bunch of Doctor Who DVDs coming out. There is a Christmas Carol, which is a good Doctor Who episode. There's also Planet of the Spiders. There's Terror of the Autons. And there's also The Mutants. So once again, the Whovians have a good reason to go to the bookstore. There's also a Godzilla Circle Portrait Zip-Up Hoodie. Godzilla World Destruction T-shirts. Green Lantern Emerald Warrior Rubber Bracelet. And also the movie logo rubber bracelet. So all kinds of wonderful things. The DVDs are also including He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, the complete season one on DVD. I have the power. I enjoyed that show, except I really distinctly hated the end where they would moralize all the stuff. Hated that. Anyway, there's a soft cover of Joss Whedon Conversations. Looks like somebody sat down and talked with Joss Whedon, and he has things to say about the industry, I'm sure, as well as other books and things like that he's been involved with. There is another t-shirt called Please Do Not Feed the Zombies. Kind of funny thing. I think that's based on a whole series of things. There's also Pocket Ninja Plush Anti-Ninja Orange and Aqua Ninja Blue characters, I guess they're coming out. They're $10 each. There are Sanchez and Friends plush mature reader type things. Some people I know are going to have a good time with this, and I don't want to know what you're going to do with it, but there is the Sarah Palin 6-inch bendable action figure for $9.99. I hope she makes a lot of money off of those. So I know some people will be having fun, and again, don't tell me what you're doing with it. There's also a Star Trek The Wrath of Khan communicator at $45. Those should be great fun. There's a Tigra statue from Marvel. There's a Vampirella Aurora model kit. That's got to be a reissue of old things because Aurora hasn't done models in years. There's also Zombie Hunter white t-shirts. There's a Zombie Killers Morty polystone figure for $25. But the thing that fascinates me the most, and there's always one thing I got to end with that's kind of fun, there's a thing called the Steampunk Bible. And because it's recently been a holiday season, I was sort of thinking, how are they going to do the steampunk Bible? Are they going to do the Bible in steampunk? Well, that's not exactly what this is about. It's called An Illustrated Guide to the World of Imaginary Airships, Corsets and Goggles, Mad Scientists, and Strange Literature. It's available in hardcover. And let me read the description to you really quickly. Steampunk is a grafting of Victorian aesthetic and punk rock attitude onto various forms of science fiction culture. It's a phenomenon that has come to influence film, literature, art, music, fashion, and more. The Steampunk Bible is the first compendium about the movement, tracing its roots in the works of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells through its most recent expression in movies such as Sherlock Holmes. Its adherents celebrate the inventor as an artist and hero, re-envisioning and crafting retro technologies, including antiquated airships and robots. A burgeoning do-it-yourself community has brought a distinctive Victorian fantasy style to their crafts and art. Steampunk evolves a sense of adventure and discovery and embraces extinct technologies as a way of talking about the future. This ultimate manual will appeal to aficionados and novices alike as author Jeff Vandermeer takes the reader on a wild ride through the clockwork corridors of steampunk history. And those are the strange and wonderful things that are in your comic store this week. That's another edition of Wayne's Comics. I again want to thank Gianluca Glazer for helping me out this week and talking about the business aspect of comics as well as the stuff that he enjoys. So we'll see what we have next week. Should be somebody fun. But until then, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.